Welcome to Here and There. I'm Dave Marish, and today we're staying here in New Mexico to talk about the travesty that is healthcare in the land of enchantment. Our guest is Fred Nathan, the executive director of the think tank, Think New Mexico. Fred, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, Dave, thank you for having me.
What is, according to the most recent Sirius study, the worst state in America when it comes to both access and affordability of health care? Let me give you another awful hint. It is the same state that was given a grade of F, as in failing, when it comes to transparency for health care pricing. Is that a hand I see in the back? Yes, sir, you are right. The answer is, alas, New Mexico. Fred Nathan says it doesn't have to be that way, and he and his organization are offering a clear, simple 4-point plan to help you find the best price and the highest quality of medical service, no matter who you are or who your health insurer might be or which is your preferred hospital. But before we get to the proposed solutions, Fred, let's take a look at the problem, which is the state of health care in New Mexico in 2014. The Commonwealth Fund, very, very serious students of health care around the world, have said we're the worst. We're the worst in the United States when it comes to access and affordability, and keeping us worse is the lack of transparency. Let's explain exactly what is meant by accessibility and affordability for healthcare.
Well, in terms of accessibility and affordability, you're right. Commonwealth did rank us last, but if you really drill down on those numbers, not very many states are doing a great job of that. So, in fairness to New Mexico, we're at the bottom, yes, but most states are grouped right around us in terms of affordability, and I'm sure part of that is the fact that we are a poor state, and that makes affordability that much more difficult.
But in a way, it's a double shocker that one of the poorest states should have some of the highest costs for the most basic of human services, healthcare. What explains that bipolarity?
I think it has a lot to do also with our rural nature as a state, and I think it's difficult to attract doctors here, to retain doctors here. The long distances to get to medical providers is a factor in that. So some of these problems are just going to be very hard to overcome just by the nature of our state and how big it is and how rural it is.
But compounding the problem, and really at the heart of the problem when it comes to shopping for medical care, which is what access and affordability really are all about, mm-hmm. is the issue of transparency. And here, if we're not the worst in the country, we are the worst in the neighborhood, because almost all of the states that border New Mexico have programs that make available online all of the basic information that you need to be a smart health shopper.
That's correct. Arizona, Colorado, and Utah all have these websites now that you can go to get information and data about the price of healthcare and about the quality of healthcare. And 14 states nationally have this now, and we'd like to become the 15th state.
Now, this started in the state of Maine, I think.
Correct, 2003.
And their Maine actually is also a very poor state, not quite comparable to New Mexico, but in its region, Maine is by far the poorest state. Mm-hmm. And like New Mexico, it has a history of innovation when it comes to state and social services. Mm-hmm. So what was the innovation that Maine started in 2003?
Well, they were the first state to say, you know, with the rise of the internet and more people having access to the internet, wouldn't it be a good thing in terms of affordability to post the prices of common medical procedures? And they did it initially, I think, just with price and not with quality metrics. And we differ on that because we think it's important to know about quality. And maybe we can come back to that. And in fact, they found that when you gave consumers these prices, consumers in many cases take advantage of that and do shop around. And, you know, I should acknowledge at the beginning, a lot of people think that, that most of medical care is emergency medical care. It's actually only about 10%. And obviously, when you're in the back of an ambulance, you're not going to have the ability to shop around. But for many procedures, the other 90%, you really can, whether you're getting a lab test or x-rays or a hip, you know, replacement. You can shop around, and that would be a good thing in terms of bringing prices down.
It is always a shocking surprise to see the disparity in prices among medical providers, among hospitals in particular, for exactly the same procedures, using the same techniques, the same aftercare medicines, the same length of stay in the hospital. I remember particularly because this summer I was hospitalized with septicemia, blood poisoning, and here two hospitals roughly similar in that they are small community hospitals in the same northeastern quadrant of the state, Las Vegas, and then 77 miles north of that, Taos. The variation was incredible.
Yeah, the difference is, and this is based not on data that Think New Mexico collected, Dave, but information that came directly from Medicare and Medicaid as to what these two hospitals charge. And the difference is $19,000 in Taos and about $72,000 in Las Vegas. And as you point out, these two hospitals are only 77 miles apart.
And again, let's repeat those numbers because it's stunning. For the same illness, the same treatment, the same professional dedication, one hopes, under $20,000 in Taos, more than $70,000 in Las Vegas.
Yeah, and as we point out in the report, you can find out, and the reason nobody knows about this is because it's not published. It's not available to the public. And as we point out in the report, you can now, today in New Mexico, find more information about a household appliance that you want to purchase, be it a refrigerator or a microwave oven, than you can about a serious medical procedure that you might need.
Now, a lot of people assume that you get what you pay for, that the higher-priced hospital is going to give you the better quality service, but tain't so.
Not correct. And there are a number of studies that we cite in the report. People think this because every other market generally works that way, that you do, in fact, get what you pay for. In the healthcare market, it doesn't work that way, and probably because it's so opaque. But there's actually a slight negative correlation between price and quality. And that's, you know, one of the things that we point out in the report, and we're learning from those 14 states that I mentioned. Frankly, many of those websites are not very good. And one common mistake that some of them make is to only put price data on their website. And because most people assume that you get what you pay for, they assume that the highest priced medical care is the best. In fact, in many cases, the highest priced medical care is because a provider may have a lot of readmissions, high infection rate, and that's what makes medical expenses spike is when you have those readmissions or those errors. And so in many cases, those are the most expensive are to be avoided. And so one of the things that we're proposing with this website is not to just have price data, but to have quality indicators like infection rates, like readmission rates, so that the consumer, the patient, can shop around for the best value defined as the best medical care at the lowest price.
And we should say that, again, the qualitative data comes from an objective source, CMS, the government administrator of Medicare and Medicaid, and is based on close scientific calculation of infection rates and of outcomes, deaths, readmissions to the hospital, infection rates, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I underscore this, Fred, is that a few weeks ago, we had on our show Katie Thomas of the New York Times, who did a brilliant investigative report on Medicare.gov's nursing home compare site, in which two-thirds of the data came unchecked, unscientific, unverified, from the nursing homes themselves. And since she published that story, now about 2 weeks ago, Medicare has awakened and said, oh, thank you for the slap in the face, Ms. Thomas. We are going to make sure that all of our data is verifiable data. And again, the ludicrous comparison, which apparently got Medicare.gov into this non-comparative comparison, was spoken by Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, who said, if the government can rate refrigerators and electric appliances, why can't they rate nursing homes? And of course, the answer is because appliances have definable standards which can be measured, whereas qualitative standards for nursing homes, especially if they're being almost exclusively self-reported by the nursing homes themselves, are much harder to define and harder to measure. Not so with hospitals. With hospitals, outcomes are clearer and more definitive, and the qualitative ratings that are already on some state websites and that you would like to see in New Mexico actually are based on hard, verifiable data.
That's correct. And, you know, the other thing is, in many cases, the 44 hospitals in New Mexico provide data right now to the Department of Health on some of these qualitative indicators. They're just not shared with the public. And so this is already going on. We just want to make it more publicly available.
Right. So get to the solutions portion, because
yes,
we're still muddling about with the problem here, and we will get to Think New Mexico's excellent proposed solutions. There are not great additional costs to the state in making this information available. This is information the state's already collecting.
Correct.
All right, let's go back to the problem itself and the problem of the lack of transparency. Right now, if you are shopping for a hospital, let's say for knee replacement, this is something that is almost always scheduled in advance. It's discretionary. It is a non-emergency procedure in 99% of its cases. Is there, again, a wide variation in both price and quality?
Yes. I know about price just from the Medicare data that's available, the Medicaid data that's available. We looked, we spent, I don't know, about 2 months this summer culling through this data. And what we basically did is found about the 100 most common medical procedures that New Mexicans might need. And then we looked at the lowest and highest and midpoint for these 44 hospitals. And in every single case, the difference between the lowest price and the highest price was several multiples. And I don't know of another market that I can think of where you would see that much wildly fluctuating price differentials.
Now, another correlation, and it's not quite as precise as the correlation between or the lack of correlation between price and quality, is that the highest prices tend to be at facilities in the poorest areas. I mean, for example, with septicemia, Taos has a mixed population. It's not all wealthy skiers, but it's a much more prosperous community than Las Vegas, which is one of the poorest towns in the state. And again, the way in which price discrimination, and let's get to that as the next part of the problem,
sure,
works, it does tend to pile on to hospitals serving poor populations, because much of the poor population does not have insurance and cannot pay full price, and therefore, in order to cover their costs, hospitals in poor areas often have the highest listed prices, which is, again, compounding an injustice.
Yeah, you're exactly right, David, that it's interesting because Medicare pays about 94% of the cost to a hospital of providing care, and Medicaid only pays 89%. The federal government, in effect, is driving this cost shifting, and it's most pronounced, you're exactly right, in the poorer areas of the state because they have to do even more cost shifting to compensate for the fact that their population is more dependent on government health care.
So again, one of the advantages to so-called Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is enforcing, and let's be blunt about it, that's what it does, forces people to get insurance coverage. This actually relieves hospitals of an increasing amount of non-payers or partial payers because through their the insurance that they've been forced to buy, they're better able to compensate the hospitals. So Obamacare actually is great for both hospitals and, because it's driving new customers to insure, to insurance companies. Although Obamacare is usually pitched as a boon to consumers, there's a mixed record there. But in terms of providers, Obamacare is Hanukkah and Christmas back to back.
Yeah, and another aspect of Obamacare that makes what we're proposing, I think, particularly urgent is that it is moving the whole healthcare system towards higher and higher deductibles. And economists celebrate that. They think that this is a good thing because it will make patients and consumers more price sensitive, and that will help to bring prices down. And that would be correct if we had public information about price and quality. But because we don't have that, and those are essential features of a functioning marketplace, then the high deductibles are not going to have the effect that the economists want. So we think by coupling greater disclosure and transparency around prices and quality, that maybe these higher deductibles that everybody's wringing their hands about actually could bring about what the economists think that it will bring about, which is greater price sensitivity.
Of course, I should bite my tongue, but I can't restrain myself from guessing that most economists have terrific health insurance through their academic positions and are not paying the highest of deductibles, which can be a real problem for poor people.
I thought you were going to talk about the accuracy of weathermen and economists, but maybe that's for another show.
Yeah, we'll save that one for another show. Price discrimination.
Yes.
I mean, this is the heart of the heart of the problem. Almost every hospital in America, for exactly the same procedure, for exactly the same planned length of stay, aftercare treatment, blah, blah, blah.
Same doctor.
Right. They all have not one price, but at least three, four, five different prices. And what you are going to be asked to pay depends on whether you're Medicaid or Medicare, or whether you're a mega insurance customer like Blue Cross Blue Shield, or whether you're a customer of a smaller insurance company, and these are the prices that are going up and up and up, or if you have no insurance at all, you are paying the truly shocking sticker price.
That's correct. Perversely, it's the uninsured who get charged the most. And then in descending order from that, it's people that have small insurance companies. The larger insurance companies have more market clout, so they can negotiate better rates with providers. And then at the bottom, the people that are really getting the best bang for the buck are Medicaid and Medicare because they've got the most market clout. And so you could have 10 Santa Feans go to St. Vincent's, and I'm not picking on St. Vincent's. This is true of pretty much any hospital in America, and those 10 people could get the exact same procedure, as you point out, with the same doctor in the same hospital and have 10 different prices that they actually pay depending on who's paying the bill for them.
And again, going back to transparency, the time that almost everybody learns of this price disparity is not until they get the bill.
That's correct. And again, so we started out with this premise of, wouldn't it be great to have a website where people could get access to this information? And again, trying to learn from the 14 states that have done this and some of the mistakes that they've made. And one of the reasons that these websites haven't been as successful as they could be is because in every state, pretty much, you've got this incredible price disparity based on who's paying the bill. And so it's hard for consumers to decipher all that. And it would be better if we could have a single rate so that you know if you go to hospital X for procedure Y, you can expect to pay a single price as opposed to a wide range. It would be like if you called me and said, my wife and I are coming to Santa Fe, we're going to go out to dinner, what can we expect to pay? The answer is it depends on whether you're going to Geronimo's or McDonald's. And if you just do what some of these websites do, which is to post an average, it's not very helpful. So that's how we came to looking into this issue of price discrimination and how we could somehow make it more uniform. And the problem is that Medicare and Medicaid are paying 89 and 94% of costs. And Maryland is the one state, Dave, that's been able to address this. And they've eliminated price discrimination, and they did it by getting a waiver I think about 37 years ago that they
bring Medicare and Medicaid up to a market price, that single all payer price. We'll get to that in a moment, but right now our guest is Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico. I'm Dave Maris. This is Here and There. We'll be back after a pause for these messages. Welcome back to Here and There. I'm Dave Marish. Our guest is Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico. And Fred and Think have been thinking about healthcare pricing in the state of New Mexico. One of the really interesting aspects of price discrimination, where basically, the less insurance or the smaller insurer you are with, the higher price that you pay. You might think that it would be very expensive for providers to go to a one-price system. But in fact, the opposite is true. It will save hospitals and doctors money if there is a single price that everybody pays, whether they're on Medicaid or Medicare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, or have no insurance at all. How is that possible?
That's exactly right. One of the most astonishing statistics that we came across is that about 31 cents on the dollar, Dave, that you spend on healthcare is really going for administration. And part of what drives that is the need to hire all these sort of middlemen and middlewomen to translate this very complex pricing system to patients and to insurance companies and to hospitals and to go back and forth. And of course, if it were a simpler uniform pricing system where the hospitals would determine the price, but they couldn't discriminate between different consumers and different patients, then it would be a much simpler system to administrate, and that would lead to enormous cost savings both to providers and to insurance companies, and that should be passed on to patients and consumers.
Now, I'm sure that most of our listeners know that the United States pays almost 50% more of its gross national product for Medicare than the second most, much less the rest of the developed world. And again, we're not getting what we're paying for because in terms of life expectancy, we're down near the bottom of the developed world, 26th out of 30. Interestingly enough, the two countries that have and have had for years now, not just socialized medicine, but this all-payer system where there is only one price for particular medical procedures, Germany and Switzerland, both pay far less for health care than we do. And the average German outlives the average American by 2 years. The average Swiss outlives Americans by 4 years. And it isn't because they're eating yogurt on their hillsides. It is because their national health care systems are better than ours for far less cost. And the single factor that accounts for that difference in cost is the amazingly high cost of administration, advertising, marketing, and a kind of artificial competition among health insurers and hospital providers.
You're right. Germany and Switzerland, very good at allocating capital to the real expense, which is healthcare, and avoiding all of the expense on back office and administration, which is where we do a really poor job, and I think is what explains why we're 50% higher than the Netherlands, which is the next closest country to the United States in percentage of GDP spent on healthcare.
So we've said that among the problems that New Mexicans face in getting health care is there's a lack of access, particularly in rural areas. And some of that is going to be awfully hard to solve, except maybe through 21st or 22nd century long-distance medical care. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's sort of built into being a huge, sparsely populated state. But there are other issues of accessibility, affordability, and transparency, all of which create these incredible price disparities that you call price discrimination, quite rightly. Mm-hmm. So let's move to the solution side, because you've got this wonderfully simple but nationally tested program of four relatively clear, simple steps to better statewide medical care.
Well, thank you. And listening to you, Dave, I wish you were in the legislature to make this easy to enact. So the first thing, is, as we've talked about, is the website. And there we've really spent a lot of time looking not at what we like about them, but why they're not even more effective than they should be. And there's a number of things that these 14 states do wrong. There are a lot of things they do right, but we focused on the things that they did wrong because we want to have the model. Yeah, we want to have the model website in the country. One thing that some of these states do is they publish the charge master rates. The charge master rates are these phone book sized binders full of prices for every conceivable thing that you could possibly need in a hospital or medical provider, and that's simply indecipherable to most people. California did this, for example, so we don't want to do that, and that's why we're proposing that the website just focus on about the 100 most common medical procedures that most people are likely to need.
And it should be said here, and here again, both the Affordable Care Act and the practice of Medicare and Medicaid has had a great clarifying effect, because the old medical system in America was you pay for every stitch, every aspirin, and what ACA, the Obamacare, is trying to push us towards is a one price for a solution to a medical problem. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you go to the hospital to get your knees replaced, the hospital is going to quote you an overall price, and they're going to have to stick with it as Medicare, Medicaid, and the larger insurance companies are making sure that they stick with it. And again, if you can achieve all-payer pricing, one single price, it will be for soup to nuts. It won't be a nickel for a spoon of soup, a second nickel for that second spoon, et cetera, et cetera.
And you're right, Dave. What we're proposing sort of dovetails with there's a tiny group of reformers out there nationally led by Michael Porter, who's a business school professor at Harvard. And what they're saying is the current model isn't working. That's the volume model. And what we really need to do is move towards a value model. So in the volume model, you get paid fee for service, and there's terrific incentive, obviously, to have more lab tests, more x-rays, and so forth. A value model is really what we were talking about earlier, about getting the best medical care at the lowest possible price, and something that's being experimented with nationally that this would dovetail well with is where a provider would just be given, you know, by a payor, $5,000, say, just to use a round number, for a knee replacement. And so the more efficient you are and the more, you know, the better the quality, you're likely to make a pretty good profit on that.
I mean, one of the problems with our present system is almost none of us get a detailed bill, and almost no doctors get a detailed bill, so that, you know, the doctor says, I'm not sure, but I think I'll order a test. And there's never a price tag for either you or the doctor to say, well, maybe if it's ambiguous whether I need it, let's save $29,000 and not do that test.
And actually, there's some studies that indicate doctors, by the way, are just as much in the dark as their patients in most cases. And there are a number of studies that we cite in the report that indicate when doctors are given this information, they're less likely to order as many tests when they're aware of what the prices of some of these things are. So,
if we can have an agglomerated price for making you whole again, not piece by piece, but a total price, this is a strong encouragement for the hospital not to do unnecessary tests, not to have unnecessary staff, but to simply solve the problem within a fixed budgetary, predictable budgetary cost.
That's exactly right. And so going back to the website, the second thing that we've learned is to have those quality metrics. And even if we got a bill through the legislature that didn't have data about prices but just had data about quality, that would do enormous good both for patients and for cost of care, because Pennsylvania is a great example of this. About 20 years ago, they started comparing providers based on readmission rates, infection rates, and not surprisingly, the hospital started to compete at that and brought their infection rates and readmission rates down substantially with enormous savings across the state of Pennsylvania. So again, quality metrics have to be a part of this website. And then the third thing to make it understandable is to eliminate this price discrimination, which is going to be somewhat ambitious in the sense that we actually want to go to Washington and talk to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid and our delegation there about getting a waiver like the state of Maryland has so that we could increase the reimbursement rates for our hospitals in New Mexico, and so that they can both recover their costs and get a little bit of profit to keep their doors open to provide the charity care that hospitals provide, and also use that as a incentive to get the private insurance to come down to that one more uniform rate, so that this website would be really easy to read and easy to navigate for consumers.
One of the fears of providers is that if there's a centrally derived price, particularly if it's a politically derived price, that it's going to break their bank, that it's going to be too low. But in fact, the Maryland, which is the one state that actually does dictate price rather than letting the market do so, in Maryland, it had the opposite effect because, as you say, the state got a waiver and Medicare and Medicaid had to bring their reimbursement rates up. So that no hospital, and I don't think any hospital in the state of Maryland, has been forced into bankruptcy by this single-payer program.
Right. And Maryland, their price system is a model that other states would like to replicate. We wouldn't do it the same way as Maryland, as we point out in the report. I don't think we could get that through the legislature, where the government dictates to the hospitals what they could charge. Our model would be a more market-driven one, where the hospital would determine their prices. They just simply couldn't discriminate between different patients. They would have to figure out, okay, for a knee replacement, that costs us about $4,500. We could get by if everybody paid $4,800, including Medicaid and Medicare,
and again,
as well as private insurance.
The key is if they publish that price so that they are then in competition, then the market can operate efficiently. Because when it comes, for example, to drug pricing, Congress's refusal to let Medicare and Medicaid use their huge bargaining power has resulted in very highly inflated drug prices, where, again, Americans simply pay more for pharmaceuticals than almost anybody else on earth.
You're exactly right, and Congress needs to address that issue, and I'm glad you're putting a spotlight on that. So those are the two basic proposals. The other, we've hit on three of them now: the website, the price discrimination, the Medicare reimbursement. The fourth thing that's sort of a necessary precondition is to get rid of these gag clauses, and maybe we ought to spend a little time on that, which is when insurance companies negotiate with providers like hospitals. Often both sides will want to enter into a gag clause where neither side can reveal the negotiated rates that they've come up with. And that might be in the hospital's interest, might not be. It might be in the insurance's industry. It's clearly not in the public's interest not to have access to those rates. And that's why we're talking to so many people now who are coming out of the woodwork. They've read the report and want to talk about their situation. And many people have shared with us their frustration in calling up the hospital ahead of time and saying, you know, my husband's having a back surgery. We'd like to know what this costs and how frustrating it is to try to get this information out. And many times the hospital administrators, they don't know themselves and can't tell people what these prices cost. But obviously, if you're going to have a website, that data is going to become public, and so we need to get the legislature to eliminate or prohibit in law the ability to enter into gag clauses involving medical costs.
As a journalist, the very phrase gag clause or gag rule makes me gag because it is the very definition of something to hide. If you're not trying to hide something that you don't want the public to know about, you don't need a gag order or a gag clause or a gag policy. Our guest is Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico. We'll come back with spelling out exactly what Think New Mexico thinks the New Mexico legislature should enact in the next session. I'm Dave Marish. This is Here and There. We're going to pause for a couple of messages. Welcome back to Here and There. I'm Dave Marish. Our guest is Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico, and our subject is bringing some transparency and justice to the healthcare pricing system in the state of New Mexico. And as we've been saying, Think New Mexico has really boiled this down to four very simple, easy to understand, clear legislative initiatives. Fred, what's number one?
Number one is the website and getting out the data about both price and quality so that people really have the ability to shop around. And as we said earlier, you know, you can't have a functioning marketplace unless there's publicly available information about price and quality.
Right. I mean, imagine if you went to the supermarket and there were all of the bins and shelves of things, but you only learned the price of each of them when you got to the register and it was too late to turn back.
Right. And there's a Princeton economist, Uwe Reinhardt, who's very well known in this area, and he likens this system to going to a department store blindfolded, buying some things, and then 2 months later getting an indecipherable bill with a little box at the bottom that says, pay this amount. And so clearly that's not a functioning marketplace and a system in need of reform.
So proposal number one, there should be a statewide website online which gives you both the prices charged by every hospital, every medical provider, every clinic in the state of New Mexico, and data on the quality of medical service that they provide. And again, this is not going to be expensive to implement because almost all of this data already exists.
That's correct. And the software is, you know, 14 states are doing this, so it shouldn't be expensive to upload this data and make it accessible to the public at large.
And in the 14 states, and this ranges literally from Maine to California, and includes almost all of our neighbors except Texas, the neighbor that we all
pity New Mexico. So
turn our backs on.
Yeah,
has there been great turbulence and upset in the medical care industry as a result of these websites being available?
I don't think there has been, but I don't know about – I couldn't say about all 14 states. But I think there was a lot of upset in California when they wanted to – and they got a law through to just regurgitate the entire charge master list. And it really didn't turn out to be that effective because consumers
right,
and patients couldn't
get – Right. You needed to be user-friendly.
Right. And I don't think the providers really wanted to have to dump out all that data. But – they've done it, and I don't think it's been particularly effective.
And again, this website would be a listing of the 50 or 100 most frequently needed procedures. But with that as a precedent, if you happen to need procedure 101 that isn't on the list, you would be greatly empowered in terms of demanding from four or five medical providers that are convenient to you that you would be considering on your shopping tour to give you the data for the 101st or the 150th procedure.
Well, we're hoping, Dave, that after the providers and the insurance companies and the patients and the legislature and the governor see how well this works, that we will be able to encourage them to expand the list and go from 100 to maybe 500 eventually. So I think you've got to walk before you can run, and so we're aiming for 100. But I think that list over time will be expanded, and I think we'll go beyond just hospitals to all medical providers. But again, we want to do it slowly, gradually, incrementally, and build trust before we...
Right. I mean, the first thing that you've got to do is make it welcoming to consumers. You've got to get people in the habit of, oh, I'm thinking of a medical procedure. Let me go to the website because it's so easy for me to use. If it's not easy, they'll take one look and not go back and not gain any of the benefits of this kind of publication.
That's right. And we say in the report, even if nobody, no patient or no consumer ever went to this website, it would still have a valuable effect because I guarantee you the hospitals would go and look and compare prices. And those hospitals that are the outliers would be incentivized to reduce their prices.
All right. Legislative proposal number one, the creation of a price and value and quality website for medical services. Proposal number two.
Flows from proposal number one, and that is to outlaw price discrimination by directing New Mexico's hospitals to charge all payers the same prices with no discounts except for indigent patients. We want to still urge hospitals to do that. And so that leads to proposal number three, which is to bring the reimbursement rates up through a waiver for Medicaid and Medicare so that hospitals, you know, sort of a carrot approach rather than the stick approach.
And let's underscore that it's important that these medical providers sustain themselves so that the price has got to be as fair to them as it is to the consumer. But again, this is a realizable project. hospitals all budget for themselves. They all allow for a certain amount of charity care. They all build in a lot of negotiating costs, many of which could be removed by an all-payer system. So that coming up with an economically fair price for everything, fair to the consumer and fair to the provider, not only can be done, but the state of Maryland has shown it definitely can be done without damaging Johns Hopkins or any of the other fine or small community hospitals in Maryland.
That's right. The hospitals in Maryland are thriving under this system, so we know it works. And then the fourth proposal is to prohibit gag clauses in contracts between insurers and healthcare providers. And again, that's part and parcel of having this website. You couldn't have one without the other.
And transparency in medical care is actually a reflection of one of Think New Mexico's obsessions, which is that the more transparent government is in all of its services, the more accountable it's going to be, which means the higher quality of service is going to be delivered, because if the customer knows about it, he can then demand it.
That's a great point. And, you know, the hospital up in Taos, Holy Cross Hospital, recently on their own moved to this system. They're the only one out of 44 hospitals, because they figured out that If you tell the patients on the front end what their medical procedures are going to cost, they're much more likely to pay the bill on the back end. And so they've just started experimenting with the system about 2 months ago, and we're hopeful that they will come and talk about their experience with the legislature and why they believe it's in their own interest to be more transparent.
To throw another bouquet at Holy Cross Hospital in Taos, it has also, over the last couple of years, developed an excellent community board system in which doctors, nurses, unionized and non-unionized, and customers all meet together regularly and are given real input into how service is delivered at the hospital. In many ways, Christa St. Vincent is the bipolar opposite of this. So many of their labor relations problems stem from having created an ostensible collaborative board between their unionized personnel and management, which rarely met, and when it did meet, rarely functioned, and had almost no community input at all. And, you know, there is a credibility problem for Christus in this community. Taos has shown the way to solve all of that.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful that St. Vincent's will follow the model that Holy Cross and Taos has put forward, and they're very popular in their community. And this is something that I hope St. Vincent's will get in front of and support. And we've been talking to some people there, and I think there's some genuine interest, so I'm optimistic.
So keep that optimism, because clearly these are four, as I say, simple, clear, and doable propositions. But you don't expect an easy ride through the legislature. Why not? Where is the turbulence, the static, going to come from?
Well, the first thing to understand about the legislative process is it's really not designed to pass bills. It's designed to stop bills, and only about 15%, if you go back historically over the last decade or so, of bills pass. And the vast majority of those are small, minor, you know, tweaks in language. So anytime you come in with something that dramatically changes the status quo, you know, the odds are against you. But what we have, I think, going in our favor is that this is clearly, we're on an unsustainable path now. I think the legislature understands that the, you know, in 1980, the cost of health care as a percentage of state GDP was 6%. The last year that we could get data was, oddly, 2009. It was 17%.
That struck me as very odd, because so much of the data is known and is compiled, and to have to rely on 7-year-old data or 5-year-old data is pretty rude.
And I'm guessing it's continued to go up, and it's closer to 20%. So the legislature, I think, is open to solutions. And of course, they see it reflected in the state budget, where health care is now the second biggest cost.
27.4% of the state budget now goes to health care. And qualitatively, for the average citizen in New Mexico, this is not an outstanding product. And to have grown so fast and consumed such a great share of the state budget, clearly something's out of control and needs to be reined in here.
Right, and it's crowding out spending on higher education, K through 12, which are already, you know, we underinvest in. So I think we have going for us, frankly, this is a crisis. It's unsustainable. And the legislature is looking for solutions. So I'm hoping that our timing is right, and that and so far we're getting some good feedback from the governor's office and from various legislators around the state. So we're optimistic that this might be the right time.
Well, if you find Think New Mexico's 4-point plan to improve health care service in the state of New Mexico as persuasive as I do, I hope you'll get in touch with your legislator and pass the word, because that is how things get done. That's our story for this edition of Here and There. Our guest has been Fred Nathan, the executive director of Think New Mexico. Fred, thanks so much for joining us.
Dave, thank you for having us.
I'm Dave Marish. Research and production assistance has been provided by Mary Lou Cooper. Operational mastery by Nick Appalucci. Our theme is by Kate Powell. Follow us on Twitter at Dave Marish, KSFR, and join us again when we go here and there in search of news.